show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, the season marches on, and the Royals continue to tread water, apparently.
Yeah.
So things may be changing. I don't know if it's positive. Probably quite the opposite. We'll get into that in a second. First, I am Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, of course, is the ever-stable, very good swimmer himself, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this wonderful evening?
I'm actually a very poor swimmer, so.
Very poor swimmer.
Some
well,
fake news.
Well, maybe you can tread water like the Royals are now, which is to say not tread water. So
I could survive in the water, so there's that.
There you go. There is that. Speaking of survive, I survived my first vacation, first long extended car ride with the wee child. And for any new parents out there, I know Hunter Samuels on the Baseball Prospectus Kansas City writing staff is a new parent himself, but any new parents listening, best advice I can give you is get you some Elmo and some Sesame Street, pop that on an iPad, and let it rip, and the kids love it. It's magic. It's sorcery. It works. Because we don't let my daughter do too much technology yet. We're trying to ease her into it as much as possible.
What about fidget spinners? Does she have any fidget spinners?
You know what? It's funny you ask.
Oh, God.
Not because we have a fidget spinner, nor does my daughter have one. But before the fidget spinner, what started the fidget craze is the fidget cube. Have you heard of the fidget cube?
I have heard of the fidget cube, yeah.
So the fidget cube was a Kickstarter, most successful Kickstarter in the history of Kickstarters, right? $6 million
really?
Raised for the $6 million raised for these fidget cubes. Yours truly was one of the first 50,000 backers for the fidget cube.
Okay.
Right? I ordered just like last year in October, I ordered the fidget cube. And I have a story to tell you about the fidget cubes. So I ordered them. They hadn't even reached their goal, which was like $100,000 or something when I ordered, or maybe it was $500,000, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they reached their goal, and then then they surpassed, became this huge success. And then as of December, they were supposed to start sending out the first wave, of which I was included in the first wave of fidget cubes, right? They then had a delay and it extended into January, et cetera, et cetera. It finally wasn't until March that they actually started sending out the first wave of fidget cubes. They said they initially got a set of fidget cubes that they were going to send out, but it didn't meet their very stringent fidgeting requirements.
Sure.
So they had to send them back to the manufacturer. Meanwhile, if you type in fidget cube on Amazon, you get all these ones that are essentially the same thing, but they're knockoffs.
Uh-huh.
And the theory was that all the bad fidget cubes that apparently didn't meet this company's standards were then sold somewhere. Someone got a hold of them and started selling them as knockoff fidget cubes via Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. So they got this sorted out. They started sending the fidget cubes, and I got like no notification about this. I didn't get any emails or anything. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Where are my damn fidget cubes? And then about a month ago, that's when like the fidget spinner revolution started, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's when things really started kicking off for the fidget spinners. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. They're kind of cool, but I want the damn fidget cube. I bought the thing, I want them. I got two of them, right?
Right.
So, so I was thinking, I was like, why is it possible? Like, why have I not gotten any sort of notification, no updates, nothing? And I had a friend who did the Kickstarter about the same time I did, and he had his fidget cubes months ago.
Huh.
Right? So I'm like, what the fuck? This doesn't make any sense. So I go to log into Kickstarter and see if I can, you know, do some research, figure something out. And I realized that I logged in with my Facebook account. Okay. No problem there, except for the fact that my Facebook account still has the email attached to it that's my college email address that I no longer have access to. So Kickstarter was sending all the updates to my college email address, including the major update, which is, hey, fill out this survey, tell us what fidget cubes you want, you know, like what color schemes, give us your address, all that kind of a thing. The very important email that you have to fill out, I never got because it went to my college email address I don't have access to. So then about a month ago, I had to contact them and I had to switch over to my new email address, or one of the ones that I actually use. And then I filled out my survey. And then I had to hound them a few times with some emails. But I finally got last Friday, literally the day before we were supposed to leave, I finally got my fidget cubes. So I had them for the long drive. My daughter actually really likes them because they're kind of small, so they fit in her hand. So she likes to carry it around, and she can move the stuff and click it and all that kind of stuff. So pretty excited about my fidget cubes. I'm actually holding it right now as we speak.
There we go.
So there we go. So that was a long, drawn-out story that has absolutely nothing to do with baseball. But I have a fidget cube, and here we are. Back to baseball.
Right.
Now, last time we talked, the Royals were 7 games under .500. Today, the Royals are 7 games under .500.
All right.
So, yay! I suppose it's great that they haven't gotten any worse.
They didn't lose ground.
Yes, but they certainly haven't gotten any better. Now, the biggest problem with that is the same can literally be said about everyone else in the division. Minnesota still leads the division. Cleveland is still second. The Royals are still 5.5 games back of the division. Compare that to, okay, let's look at this. Toronto Blue Jays are 2.5 games better than the Royals, and they're 6.5 games back in their division in last place. The Angels are, let's see, what is that?
They're only a couple games under .500, right?
Angels, they're 1 game under .500. They're, that is amounts to 4.5 games better than the Royals. And they're in second place in their division, and they are 11 games back of the Houston Astros. Now, Houston has the best record in baseball by 4 games. So, you know, Houston is off to a tear. Good for them. But still, you know, there's, you know, the, let's see, the Phillies are 14.5 games back in last place, but they're worse than the Royals. The Padres are 12.5 games back in last place in the NL West, but again, they're worse than the Royals. But point being that the last place teams in every other division, save for the National League Central, which almost parallels, like, oddly exactly how the AL Central is. So Milwaukee, who stunk for the last few years, similar to Minnesota, they're in first place, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. The Cubs, who won the World Series, are in second place with a middling record, just like the Cleveland, who they lost to, who lost to the Cubs in the World Series, is a middling record. And then, you know, St. Louis, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, teams that have done, you know, pretty well in recent years, with Chicago White Sox, Detroit, and the Royals all finishing out and with all within, you know, 5-6 games of each other. So, anyway, you know, we talked about it last week, that whole, you know, tugging on that last string of hope, it's still there. So even though the Royals haven't gained any ground, they haven't lost any either. And, you know, it's kicking the, I think you've said it this way before, it's just kicking the can further down the road when you've got, it's a week later and they're in the same spot.
Yeah.
So now, one of the things that we'll start with the show talking about today is the fact that what really changes them from being a team that was 7 games back last week to 7 games back this week is, as of 2 days ago, they are now a team that, or I said 7 games back, 7 games below 500, 5.5 games back. What the difference now from last week is they're a team that's 7 games below 500, 5.5 games back, who no longer has their star pitcher that they just signed to a big contract in the offseason, Danny Duffy, who will be out 6 to 8 weeks a torn oblique, was it?
It was like a strained oblique, but I mean, it's strain is a tear. It's grade one, it's not like it tore off the bone or anything, but it's still oblique injury is bad for any sport. I mean, it's just like you can't do anything.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're going to take their time to get him right. Duffy obviously is sitting there saying that he's going to come back early because he's Danny Duffy and he's the eternal optimist in all cases. But yeah, I mean, 6 to 8 weeks, that is basically it's May 31st today. Tomorrow will be June 1st. And so we're 2 months away from the trade deadline. So the Royals have 2 months without Danny Duffy to go on some kind of a run that puts them above 500 and in a playoff race, which is, it's not impossible because they're only, they haven't played very well for, basically the first 2 months of the season. So all they have to do is start actually playing well and maybe they can catch up. But, it is about time. We've really we didn't talk about rebuilding or trades or, anybody departing early in April because that was too early. But we're at the stage now where this is the kind of news that can really sink a season. If the Royals were at 500, this would be pretty tough news. And so when they're already going uphill without one of their best players, without one of their best pitchers for an extended period of time, it's a pretty big loss. So you take that and you also factor in that Ian Kennedy was out for a couple of starts and his 2 starts after he came back weren't that sharp. Nathan Carnes is also on the disabled list. He's probably going to be able to come back maybe for the turn after his next one. But, that's just a number of starts that the Royals are going to lose out on over the next, that they've lost out on already. And that they'll miss out on going forward with Duffy on the DL. And they have to make that up somehow. And it's, I don't know if you've heard this before, but the Royals haven't always been that great at developing starting pitching. So
you don't say.
It's a little difficult to just call someone up when there's not really anybody ready. Miguel Almonte almost made a start in New York. That game was rained out. That was really just a stopgap kind of thing. I think he would have been all right, but whatever. Jake Junis made a start and pitched okay, but isn't someone that I think if you really feel like they have a shot to come back, he's probably not someone you really want to look at. And the Royals called up Eric Skoglund kind of out of nowhere to fill in for Duffy. And he pitched well, and we'll talk about him a little bit later. But, it's a significant loss. I mean, you expected 200 innings out of Duffy. You expected about 200 strikeouts out of Duffy. You figured he would improve upon his season last year. And now, there's going to be 6 to 8 weeks to recover, and then he's got to get up to speed. Basically he's got to go through a spring training again and see what happens when he comes back. And by that point, the Royals may just be completely out of it, and this may be a completely different looking team for Duffy's final, 10 starts or whatever at the end of the year. So it's tough news. It's real tough news for a team that was already struggling. And, for it to be Duffy as well, who's such a fan favorite, it's a little bit more disappointing just because, you like to watch him and you want to see him develop and kind of reach the potential that the Royals believe he has and that most fans believe he has. which he can't do if he's on the disabled list. So it's a bummer. It's pretty rough.
Yeah, you know, I was on vacation when I heard the news, and it's, you know, I was running around and everything with the family, so I didn't really have time to digest it. But on the drive home, I was kind of like, man, that really sucks. You know, and if we're talking about the Royals and continuing to cling to some sort of bit of hope, in a negative aspect, as in they're clinging to this and they shouldn't be, you know, I think they could look and say, well, you know, in 2014, Hosmer was out for a while and the Royals were still able to keep things together and rally towards the playoffs. And then in 2015, Gordon was out for quite a while and they were still able to keep things together and rally to the playoffs. And, it wasn't really a rally at that point, but to keep the momentum moving towards the playoffs into the World Series in both years. So, you know, unfortunately, even staring in the face something as catastrophic to a season as your best pitcher and centerpiece of your rotation, you just signed a big contract, being out with an injury for possibly two full months, there's still something the Royals can cling to in terms of recent history to think why they shouldn't yet sell the farm, because they can still make it work and they have before. So, you know, while it's legitimate to say, you know, they certainly can, and you said it as well, that yeah, it's something that could happen, certainly, and not even something that's highly improbable. You know, it's not likely. But, nope. You know, it's not something that would be just like, oh, my God, what sorcery is this? You know, it would be like, oh, the Royals are surprising, but, you know, good. So, however, I still think, you know, as you kind of alluded to, it's just, you know, there's not much you can point to when you say, how do we get from here to there? Where do we need to be to really make a run at this thing and say, we're going to make this happen. We can get to the playoffs. We can win the division, whatever the case may be. You know, you got to start making ground on getting back to 500 and then getting above 500 and making ground towards, you know, getting to catch Cleveland or Minnesota or whoever. And, you know, it doesn't look like it's happening with Duffy, or it didn't look like it was happening with Duffy. So now that he's gone, where do you see that coming from? And it was great that Skoglund had a nice debut, and, you know, hopefully he can keep it rolling and he can be a solid pitcher for this organization. But, you know, the odds of him giving you what we imagine Duffy would give, excuse me, for the rest of the season, pretty slim. No offense to the kid, but, you know, that's just the way things work. Duffy didn't have a very good rookie season when he came up, despite showing some flashes. So, you know, it's tough, and that's the point. And so when you're looking at it and saying, well, do the Royals have a shot? You know, like, I mean, sure. But yeah, is this something that we need to be gearing towards or planning around, the Royals making this thing and making a run at it? Or do we need to start looking at other options? And I think the time of let's cling to hope because that's all we've got has passed. And you need to start looking forward. You've got Alex Gordon, Danny Duffy, Salvador Perez, Jorge Bonifacio, possibly Ian Kennedy. You know, you've got some guys who are going to be here past next year. And, you know, you need to start looking at, okay, what do we need to do to continue to be competitive? If this year is, you know, just kind of like 2016 all over again, in the sense that, you know, there was some promise on paper, the team looked good, but some slow starts, some bad performances, some injuries kind of hampered the team and just ultimately kept them from being what they could have been. That's where it seems like this season is going. So, I mean, if that's where you're at, then, you know, it's actually imprudent for you as an organization, you know, as a front office, to try and keep flying that flag out there. You can't come out and say, like, hey, we've given up on this season. You certainly can't do that, and I wouldn't expect them to. But, you know, the you know, actions speak loud. We all know what's going down. You know, when you trade Carlos Beltran mid-season, and when you trade, you know, different players mid-season, you know the writing's on the wall. So, you know, if they, you know, trade Mike Moustakas or Eric Hosmer or whoever in a couple weeks, then, you know, we'll know where they stand. But
yeah, it'd be a pretty easy decision to discern.
But they should, is the point. And, you know, who knows if they will or not. I hope that they will, but it's not looking good right now for the Royals. It's pretty, and we were talking about this right before we went on, but in terms of the current Royals season, you know, no one player derails the season. Just as I mentioned, you know, Eric Hosmer, Alex Gordon, both hurt in 2014, 2015, respectively, and the Royals still made it work. But in the context of this season, 7 games below .500 Royals, 5.5 games back Royals, nobody else left in the minors that can come up and replace Duffy. Just as you mentioned, that Royals organization right now, in that context, Duffy being injured and being out 6 to 8 weeks pretty much derails the entire season.
It's about worst case scenario.
Yeah, I'm comfortable calling it at this point, to be honest. You know, I don't want to sound pessimistic, and I'm not truly like giving up. I'm still going to watch the Royals, of course, and still go out there and still pay attention, of course. But, you know, in terms of managing expectations and aligning them with reality, the reality is this season is likely not going anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never, like, logically, there would be an argument that would say, hey, tear it all down, sell off anything that's got, you know, that you don't think is going to be long-term, the part of the next team that competes in 2-3 years, whatever. You know, sell it off, get prospects, package things together, pay off cash, you know, give teams some incentive to give you better prospects. You know, there's an argument to do that, and that would wipe out, like, you know, half the team, you know, if you can manage to do that somehow. You know, but I, you know, Dayton Moore's going to say all the right things. He's going to adamantly say that they're looking to contend and looking to turn it around until they absolutely just can't do it. You know, the example I think of is, you know, in late July, the Royals were looking like, you know, they weren't playing well. They were behind a bunch of teams. It looked like they had James Shields available, and, you know, maybe they would trade him off for prospects and give it another go in 2015. And then they went on that 15 of 20 kind of run, that legendary kind of thing.
Yes.
Ended up in first and basically held on to a wild card spot, and the rest is history. But, you know, that was basically Dayton Moore was maybe like a week away from having to make that kind of decision. And now I think the decision is going to come a lot sooner. I would still say that the Royals are probably going to let things kind of marinate a little bit. You know, I don't think they're going to sit there and sell guys off tomorrow because it's June 1st. You know, I think they're going to give these guys a chance to play. Some of them, they want them to regain some value. You know, nobody's going to trade for Alcides Escobar right now. Just not going to happen. You're not going to get anything for him. If he goes on a run for 6 weeks, maybe you can get something for him. You know, maybe they're comfortable trading Kelvin Herrera, and he goes on a tear and is, you know, lights out. He pitched really well last night. Maybe he does that for the next 6 weeks, and they can trade him off, and his stock goes up a little bit. Or Eric Hosmer adds power, or this or that. You know, I don't think they're going to be trading guys right now, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, the scenario has been in their plans. It has to have been, because they're professionals and this is their livelihood. They had to have this contingency in mind that, hey, there's going to be a point where we're not playing well, and it looks like we're just kind of hanging out until the trade deadline. They have to have an idea of what they're going to be doing. And, you know, which, you know, if that means that the decision is made, or it's very close, or they're at peace with, you know, making that decision, and they know that, hey, we're going to have to sell some of these guys off. You know, now it's just a matter of scouting, finding the best deals, starting to have conversations, things like that. But I also think that they're not going to do much until probably July at the earliest. I mean, a lot of those big moves just have not gone off until July. It just, you know, I think a lot of teams who are good, Twins, Brewers, they have to figure out that, hey, we might actually be in this thing. Now let's think about committing to going out and getting another veteran. Or a team like Cleveland might be saying, hey, we can't shake the Twins for some reason. Let's trade and go get another guy. You know, I think those are things that you've got to let the market fill itself out too. So long and short of it is, I think that gives Royals fans, you know, maybe 6 weeks to continue to watch these guys, to keep an eye on Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and Lorenzo Cain and see what happens with those guys. And even guys like Herrera or Soria or Mike Minor, who's having a great season, you know, seeing what those guys do. And possibly you could bring each of those three back, or you could trade them right now and just, you know, go with a lot of scraps in your bullpen next year. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see what happens. The alternative, and we talked a little bit about this, you know, last week, was, you know, you could see what you could get from guys like Cain and Hosmer and Moustakas. You know, if you give them the qualifying offer, they reject it and they sign somewhere, well, the Royals would get draft picks. And while we both pretty much agree that it's a little scary because of the Royals' big league development track record over the last few drafts, you know, at least that is something. That's some kind of compensation, absent anything else. So, you know, the Royals are going to be rebuilding a little bit after this year. It's kind of just a matter of when that starts and in what manner they go about that. So, you know, that's kind of what this Duffy news triggers in me, is that, okay, well, whatever decisions were on the table, they're being discussed with even more gusto now, because, you know, now's the time to really start getting those plans in order to find out, okay, who are we going to trade these guys for? Who's our, you know, what's the market for any of these guys, and then coming up with that strategy. So I think there's still time. The Royals aren't going to tear it down right now, but, you know, it is something that, you know, I would be prepared for it. I mean, it's not going to be fun. It wasn't fun when they traded Gerard Dyson, and Gerard Dyson was mostly a role player, even though he was a fan favorite. You know, we were talking about trading Moustakas and Hosmer and Cain, who have been at the forefront of this entire run of this Royals resurgence, gets pretty difficult. And, you know, as fans, it's going to be tough. It's probably not easy for the front office either to kind of come to grips with the fact that, hey, you know, we got to make difficult decisions, and difficult decisions within the next 2 months.
Yeah. It's never an easy position, and it will be strange, you know, if and when it happens to see those guys leave. I mean, you know, Wade Davis was probably the closest because of how everyone loved him so much. But, you know, at the same time, he got here in 2013 with the Will Myers, James Shields trade, but he has been in the majors ever since he's been here. His entire time with the Royals, you know, he didn't develop in the system like Hosmer and Moose did. We didn't hear about him for years. He was just kind of the and one to getting James Shields into Kansas City, and ended up turning out to be, you know, arguably a bigger piece to the trade. But it's nothing like Hosmer, Moustakas, Cain, you know, these guys that, you know, been on the covers of Sports Illustrated. They've, you know, Hosmer is the All-Star Game MVP last year, and, you know, Cain is the ALCS MVP in 2014. And, you know, you mentioned if somehow they were able to swing a trade for Escobar, I mean, he was the ALCS MVP in 2015. So, you know, all these players that there's been, it feels like careers worth of history, you know, when you start talking about the players of the Royals glory days, the George Brett era, you know, obviously George Brett notwithstanding, but some of the other players of that time, you know, the current Royals roster has kind of matched them stride for stride in terms of national and, you know, good recognition. But you know, it'll be strange to see it. It'd be interesting to see how the fans react. But you know, we have seen some positive. You know, we talked about Skoglund a little bit, and it's good to see him coming up, and you know, having another player come up, and possibly we talked about last week how we heard about this kind of next wave after the Moose Hosmer wave came through of prospects, and you know, unfortunately, it never materialized like we wanted, and a lot of that was due to the Royals making moves that they needed to make. You know, Will Myers was part of that next wave, and he had to be shipped out to bring in James Shields and Wade Davis, and you know, guys like Sean Manaea and John Lamb. You know, those guys were part of that next wave as well, and they also had to be shipped out so that we could get the Royals could get Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist, et cetera, et cetera. So you know, part of it is because they did what they needed to do, and flags fly forever, so you're never, right. You know, it's never a regret, but you know, unfortunately, it leaves them in this situation now where guys like Eric Skoglund, who never had a ton of hype around him or whatever, now they kind of have to heap their hopes on guys like him. You're not necessarily saying that he has to be the guy, but just guys that are, you know, you're not going to be your typical top 100 guys. Hopefully they develop into nice, solid major league players that the Royals can get some mileage out of. And, you know, if they can, then it makes you feel a little bit easier about, okay, like, well, we've got some potential in a guy like Skoglund, and, you know, if Miguel Almonte gets his chance and then, you know, maybe he starts to have some potential, then you say, okay, we can envision a case here where we've got some talent. Jorge Bonifacio continues to hit really well. Whit Merrifield continues to hit really well. And these guys can plug in next year, even if we lose Hosmer Moustakas, or even this year, or Kane or whoever, and then you've got the guys that you get in return, which hopefully you get some major league ready guys. Maybe you get some younger ones that might take another couple of years. You know, that's fine too. But you can kind of stay competitive, and you know, similar to last year or this year, and keep the ball rolling. You know, just keep your head afloat, if you will, like the excellent excellent swimmer that Michael Engel is. You know, keep your head above that water there, and
probably better singer than swimmer, but
also true. but it's, you know, iffy indeed, just keep it all together to the point where then if you get some good prospects in a couple of years, you know, those guys can come up and you've got another wave. And you know, that's kind of how it's done. That's kind of how it's the most prudent way to do it when you don't have enough money to sign all these players like the Royals obviously don't. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm trying to think of the way to frame this question. Let's frame it this way. In terms of, let's assume, right? We'll get into possible trade targets and returns and all that. We'll get into that at a later show. But let's just assume, you know, all that being equal, the Royals find deals that they're happy with, and they're able to get rid of Hosmer, Moustakas, and Kane. We'll start there with those three being gone. Of the young players this year, you know, the Jorge Bonifacios, the Whit Merrifields, Eric Skoglunds of the world, what has you most encouraged right now that, okay, if you know those guys leave, the returns they get, plus these guys that can, this, you know, X player that can step in and hopefully step up once they're in, gives me at least a little optimism that they're okay. Who's the guy right now that has you most optimistic for that?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's pretty cool to see that Whit Merrifield and Jorge Bonifacio have both kind of had these. I mean, we saw Merrifield last year, and he started out great, got, you know, the league adjusted to him. He didn't adjust back, went to the minors. He came back, hit okay to finish out the season. He looked a lot different. He's not striking out nearly as much. He's showing a lot more power. He bulked up in the off season. You know, it's, I think the thing that keeps getting referenced by reporters is that he has like eggs three times a day or something, you know, whatever some crazy protein.
Whatever thing. Fun anecdote they like to show.
Right, right.
On the
so
broadcast.
Conrad McGorkin on Twitter has photoshopped Whit Merrifield's head onto Gaston from Beauty and the Beast because when he was a lad, he ate 5 dozen eggs every morning to tell him to stay large or whatever.
Of course, who doesn't know that?
Right. So that's pretty exciting, especially when he's been playing a really good second base. He's taken some walks. It's like the Royals have been searching for this second baseman forever, and they kind of finally maybe have found one. We'll see how things adjust throughout the rest of the year, but right now he's got the highest OPS plus on the team, which is crazy. And Bonifacio is right behind him.
Whit Merrifield,
of all people who, you know, just, you know, was not really even on the radar for so long. Bonifacio has been. He's been a top 10 kind of prospect in the system pretty much every year. He's had all this promise, and he's finally kind of showing it. He's got a good plate approach. He's got good power. You know, he's got an outside shot at approaching Bob Hamlin's rookie record of 24 homers. You know, he's at 7 now at about a third way through the season, and he wasn't even around for the first, you know, few weeks of it. So that's a possibility, you know, something to watch out for. So seeing those two guys kind of develop, you know, if that means that you've got these two guys who are playing at, you know, able to hit at an above average rate, I think that's pretty exciting. I think it's interesting that they're both, that the, you know, Merrifield at second and Bonifacio is at right field, which historically the Royals have always been seeking out they're a new right fielder ever since they traded Will Myers, and they've been trying to find a second baseman since, well, basically since Frank White retired, more or less.
Yep.
You know, Ray Sanchez and Mark Grzelcyk, it did okay, but when you get to where you're trying out Mark T in there and you're willingly playing Chris Getz, you've got a problem as second baseman. So
yeah.
So if they've finally found one, well, then that gives them the opportunity to actually play Raul Mondesi at short next year if they don't sign Alcides Escobar, which I hope they don't. I mean, I think those two have really been kind of like the biggest bright spots because, you know, one, they're guys who are going to be cheap and they're around for long term. Bonifacio is only 23, so if he's having a true breakout, you know, and the kind of assumptions when he was coming up were a little, I don't know, pessimistic even. That could be really exciting. Now he's probably going to hit 280 and get on base 33% of the time and hit 20 homers a year. And that's perfectly fine. It's not, you know, not superstar level, but that's perfectly okay. And if he can do that, if this is a sign of things to come, then, well, the Royals have that at least. You know, also, I think kind of over the next couple of years, I mean, you've got like Ryan O'Hearn or Hunter Dozier could probably be somewhere in the first base mix to replace Hosmer. So that's kind of okay. You've got Chesler Cuthbert who can take over for Moustakas. So they have some guys who aren't exactly like super prospects or superstars in the making, but they have guys who can probably cut it at the big league level, which in previous rebuilds, the Royals really didn't have that. And if that means that they can kind of, you know, hold the line for a couple of years until some of the bigger prospects come around or some drafts come around or other guys break out, then maybe they've got something where they don't have to wait, you know, 30 years to make the playoffs the next time. Maybe it's only like 4 years.
You know? Hey, what a novel concept.
Right. That would be pretty cool. So, you know, I don't know. They're kind of in the same position. I've been doing a lot of reading about the Royals in like 93, 94, 95 lately, which was an interesting period of transition because you've got, you know, Brett retires, Ewing Kauffman dies, there's the strike. So that's when they really started to actually rebuild things. But the 95 team, even when they traded David Cone and Brian McCray off, they still had, you know, Kevin Apier and Tom Gordon were still around. Gary Gaetti had one of his best seasons there. You know, they had Brent Maine was still able to catch. They had, you know, Greg Gagne was
Wally Joyner on that team.
Wally Joyner was on that team. So they Jeff Montgomery was still around, Stan Belinda. So they had some like quality players. It's not like they did a full scrap of everything. It's just that those years really led to a lot of decisions 4 or 5 years later where, you know, they weren't getting, you know, talent. But that's a whole other topic we can cover later. This team is kind of similar in that way in that you've got Sal Perez, you've got Danny Duffy, you have Ian Kennedy. If he doesn't opt out, Alex Gordon is still going to be around. You'll still have Jason Hamill next year. You'll still have Brandon Moss next year since they signed 2-year contracts. Nathan Carnes will be back. Jorge Soler will still be around. So you're still kind of keeping guys around. And as long as they don't, you know, trade off Herrera, Soria, and or Minor. Well, Minor, they would have to exercise an option on him. But if they did that, then they would retain those three guys who have been three best pitchers out of the bullpen. So there's still kind of the framework of a big league team with some holdovers from the playoff years. You know, so you're just kind of hoping for some breakouts and maybe some shrewd acquisitions and kind of see if you can, you know, like they've tried to do this year is, you know, contend while rebuilding in a way. And maybe it's just going to be another year of in getting a couple of breakouts to go along with it, you know. So to answer your question in about 8 different ways, yeah, I mean, I think just seeing some of those guys like Merrifield and Bonifacio develop and do something is, you know, it's encouraging. It's not all hope is lost. It's not like you're banking on, you know, John Buck to be your catcher of the future and he doesn't really ever do anything.
Yeah.
Which that's always difficult. When Chris Getz is the last piece you have from the Beltran trade, it feels a little bleak.
A little bit.
You know, I think I'm with you on Bonifacio being the kind of the biggest bright spot, at least so far. You know, hopefully he can continue it rolling. But following him throughout the system, he was one of those guys. Seems like they've had him forever, and he's only 23. But, you know, he was one of those young signed prospects. And he, a couple years ago, he was having a really good season, and it got derailed by breaking the, how did you describe it? The bone that you wouldn't know existed if it wasn't for baseball, the hamate bone.
Mm-hmm.
In your hand, he got hit by a pitch. And, you know, unfortunately, so that kind of derailed that season, and it really takes a long, long time for you to get that really that grip strength back and that full confidence to get your swing back to normal. So it seemed like that derailed him for quite a while, and then he was able to kind of come back from it. But, you know, outside of that injury and coming back, the recovery from that, it really seems like throughout his career, at least from what I've followed, that he's always been a guy that's kind of outperformed his own scouting report. You know, it's always just kind of, you know, a little bit of a bigger guy, not necessarily, you know, great at defense, you know, his plate approach is okay, could have, you know, decent pop, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, have the year like he did last year where, you know, he hit very well. I think he hit like 22 home runs last year in the minors. So it always feels like he's just kind of slightly outperformed, you know, what his scouting report thinks he should be, which is a good thing. And, you know, sometimes those things can be just kind of just miss it a little bit to where, okay, maybe this guy is better than we thought he was going to be. And I'm not super optimistic on Jorge Bonifacio being, you know, all that great, but it's very encouraging to see him come up. And, you know, I mean, we saw a guy who the scouting reports were incredibly high on with Raul Mondesi last year and this year. And, you know, no offense to Raul Mondesi, but fall flat on his face and just mm-hmm. not do anything. So when you've got that situation, and then you've got Jorge Bonifacio, who has, you know, just kind of middling expectations. And then he comes up and he's, you know, as you mentioned, he's second on the team in OPS with a 120. He's got an 837, or I'm sorry, OPS plus of 120. OPS of 120 would be, man, yeah. That's Raul Mondesi.
That's Raul Mondesi, yeah.
but an 837 OPS and 7 home runs that only 33 games, 116 plate appearances. I mean, you know, that's a solid 35 home run pace. I mean, he's, you know, assuming he were playing every day, which, you know, he likely won't be for the rest of the season. I mean, if that were to continue, we got a Balboni watch on Jorge Bonifacio. How crazy would that be?
That would be crazy.
You know, it's nice to see, you know, a player who you always kind of knew could be like that major league player, that kind of fourth outfielder type, whatever. That was kind of the line on him, on what he would be as far as expectations. And to see him, you know, surpass that a little bit, even if you knocked off 100% or 100 points on his slugging, and he goes from 509 down to 409, and he keeps everything else the same, 275 batting average, 330 on base. Those are, you know, roughly estimates there. You know, it's close to what he's got now.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what he was and he had he'd still have a 737 OPS, he'd probably have like a 105 OPS plus, whatever. I mean, that's really good. I take that. I take that 100%. Like, his defense is suspect, sure.
Yeah.
But
I always get a little bit nervous when he's about to field anything, but
yeah. So, I mean, if you're taking that into account and you're saying he's a negative defensively, maybe he needs to be a little bit better than that overall. Maybe he does need to be what he is right now and continue that for a whole season to really make up for the lack of value he has defensively. I'd have to see him kind of settle in a little bit more on the defensive side of things before I make a true judgment. But, you know, it's encouraging. And then to see Merrifield, you know, as you mentioned last year, I mean, how many times have we seen rookies or young players where they come up, they have success, the league adjusts, and they just kind of disappear? You already mentioned Bob Hamlin, so we don't need to go there.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's encouraging to see Merrifield come up last year, have some success, fall off, the league adjusted, goes back down to the minors. Even last year came up and hit a little bit better when he came back. And then this year, you know, having a really good start to his season as far as, you know, his personal performance. So, you know, that's a good thing that he's been able to adjust back to the league. I mean, that's essentially all that everything is. You just keep adjusting and keep adjusting, you know, back and forth, pitcher to hitter, until, you know, eventually you reach a point where, you know, not to say that what Merrifield would ever become Miguel Cabrera, that's not in the realm of possibility, but
no.
Where like a Miguel Cabrera has, you know, pitchers are just kind of like, well, I can't make any adjustments because you're just going to adjust to it and hit me anyway. So I'm just going to try and do whatever. And, you know, I think eventually you get to that point with certain players who've shown they can adjust. And, you know, not that Whit Merrifield would ever do it to that level, but if you can show that he can adjust and survive, then, you know, there's certainly a possibility that, you know, he can become not only just an everyday player, but a very good everyday player. And one that can, as you mentioned, kind of fill that void that's been for decades, it seems, at second base, which then would allow Raul Mondesi to play his true position, and possibly that would allow him to kind of kick things back into gear for himself and get and feel. But maybe you know, trying to learn second base, it, you know, all too often I think we feel like these things are so interchangeable that it's not that big of a deal, but that's not really the case. You know, you see this a lot in football as well. The, you know, if someone plays right tackle or left tackle, like,
just,
oh, we can
switch
just switch, you know, it's like, well, it's completely in reverse everything. So it seems like, oh, they're both tackle positions, it should be easy. Well, it doesn't work that way. And similarly, you know, I think a lot of I noticed it, and we kind of talked about it in the BP Slack chat, a lot of the errors and missteps that Mondesi made early in the season were going to his right. And that's a completely different dynamic going to your right and second base, where you're trying to fill the hole up the middle as a second baseman when you go to your right, versus going to the shortstop, versus the shortstop position, where when you go to your right, you know, it's a completely different turn and different angles and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's certainly possible something like that could have adversely affected his overall game. But so it's good to see Merrifield, show that he can perform again after some adjustments, and, you know, hopefully he can be a little bit more than a stopgap, and, you know, like you said, that just kind of keep things together enough for a couple of years to where they can replenish and get this thing going again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, if they don't pan out, well, you know, I guess the expectations weren't there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I feel like, you know, Merrifield has improved things power-wise just by getting stronger in the offseason, which is, you know, everybody always says that, but, you know, you can see it. You know, he's cranked a couple of 400-plus homers, and he's not a big dude. He's just, you know, he just gets it, you know, gets the bat through the zone.
Wood on the ball, you know?
But, you know, it's just that he's cut his strikeouts down so much. You know, he's had a number of plate appearances where, you know, he'll foul off five or six pitches with two strikes and end up walking, getting a hit, doing something. And, you know, I think some of that comes down to approach and having a better game plan. So he's looked a lot better in every aspect, pretty much. So that's the most encouraging thing to see, that, okay, a very concerted effort really paid off for him. So if that means that the Royals have a second baseman now, that's pretty cool. I will take that. But we should talk about Erik Skoglund and his start, since he is stepping in for Duffy. Not that he's part of the encouraging group, because it was encouraging, but the jury is still out on him. But last night was pretty cool kind of thing, just because the Royals had, you know, Duffy had been hurt. You know, it was announced on Monday that he was hurt. Then they score seven runs and they lose, so it was pretty demoralized. So when you get to that point and you bring up some rookie, you know, making his major league debut, and he comes out and he pitches well against a tough lineup that was all righties, designed specifically to face him, a lefty, and he comes out and only allows like three base runners. That's pretty cool. And to have him do it in Kansas City, the crowd got into it. It was really pretty cool. If you haven't seen it, you might at least watch the condensed game, because it's pretty cool to watch him go. You know, rare poise for a rookie. The coolest kind of moment was, I think it was the fourth inning. Miguel Cabrera came up. Maybe it was the third inning. Miguel Cabrera came up. He gets called strike one, throws a fastball by him for strike two, and then strikes him out on the third pitch. And that's Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool to kind of hear him after the game, where Skoglund was talking about it, and someone asked him about that. And he's like, yeah, that was pretty fun. It's like, okay, cool. Seemed like a real likable guy. It was a really cool moment looking at his parents. And when you look at it from just a historical standpoint, you know, the Royals over the last few years have not had a lot of guys make their debut as starters. It's really just a handful of guys over the last like 5 years or so. You know, I'm thinking about, like, you know, Danny Duffy, obviously, in 2011 comes to mind, but that start really wasn't that good. You know, he didn't pitch that well in that game. Will Smith debuted in 2012. You know, his major league debut was in Yankee Stadium as a starter, and he got hit.
yes, he did.
Not too great. Even just a couple of other guys, like Ryan Verdugo, made his, turns out, his only major league appearance was a spot start for the Royals. He got hit around and unfortunately hasn't made it back. But, you know, that's just kind of a rare moment to bring in a guy and put him in that position. Jake Odorizzi got a couple of starts when he made his big league debut with the Royals. Jake Junis pitched one game in relief and then pitched a game as a starter. Didn't get the win, pitched okay. Really, the only pretty good start I could think of in the last 5-6 years was Yordano Ventura's start in 2013, where he came up and I think he walked the first guy on four pitches and then turned a double play on the next one and pitched pretty well, I think, like 5.2 innings or something. You know, not lights out, but really solid and really showed that he belonged at the time. And so Skoglund, you know, has a lot of guys who he's pitched better than in a big league debut. We'll have to see, you know, what he can do. We'll have some audio later, you know, towards the end of the show. as we play out, of Skoglund talking to Clint Scholes up in Omaha at his last start on the 22nd, where he struck out 9 guys and walked none. But he, you know, talked about mixing pitches and adjusting and how to kind of work against guys who are trying to hit home runs and things like that. So it's just like, you know, 2.5 minutes, but he, you know, puts a lot of information into it. So, you know, he seems like a likable kid, easy to root for, pitched really well. That's about 4 pitches and, you know, gave the team one of its best moments of the year. And if things, you know, don't improve, probably one of their only really great moments of the year. But it was pretty special. So it was, anybody who hadn't seen it, I would say go out and kind of, you know, check it out. I think it's going to be interesting to kind of take a look, but he earned another start. So we'll see how he does.
Yeah. I'm definitely gonna have to take a look at that. I saw some pictures, one where he kind of had his hand over his chest, like he was mimicking his heartbeat. Cause, I think it was after the Miguel Cabrera strikeout. Maybe I can't remember when the caption was.
There was a
it...
deep drive to right that got caught at the warning track, yep. Right at the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. So, seems like it's really cool. And I saw, you know, intermittently, I was able to see some of the Twitter reactions, and stuff. And that was super cool. So I'll definitely have to check that out. And, yeah, hope for the best for the kids. So always happy to see, you know, I always heard good things about him from Clint Scholes, as far as, you know, him as a person and things like that. So, you know, obviously you want the best baseball players, but when you can see a kid like that come up and you hear, you know, firsthand that he's a good kid and all that kind of a stuff, that it really, you know, it's really cool to see that. It's just, sometimes we forget that these, you know, athletes are humans too. And, you know, if you can imagine the pride that you, you know, had, or, you know, hopefully had when you started your first job or your first full-time job, or you got some promotion or something like that, you know, that's what's happening for these guys right in front of all, you know, millions of us. And it's super cool. So really awesome to see, you know, some good things happen like that. Hopefully it's not the, no offense to Eric Skoglund, but hopefully it's not the best moment of the season.
Right.
We will see. But as you said, he earned himself another start, and that's something that we haven't been able to say about many young Royals starters over the last few years. So that's pretty solid.
I mean, John Lamb never really pushed it up here, and Mike Montgomery never pushed it up here, and Odorizzi even still kind of hung out for a bit. So, you know, when you look at what a lot of old Royals prospects ever did, you know, a lot of them didn't really do a whole lot. And Skoglund, even though it is a spot start kind of situation, you know, he pitched well in the minors, and he pitched well enough to get a look, and the stuff was pretty good. He seemed to have good command. Historically, he pitches pretty well in the strike zone, doesn't walk a lot of guys, can still get strikeouts. So, I mean, if you can find a young guy like that, you know, that's something that you want as an organization. If you can teach him to pitch well, there you go. So, and he's also 6'7" and looks like he weighs about 150 pounds. So he's
so there's that.
He's tall and lanky and you know, I don't know. I think someone was compared him his haircut to, well, he compared his own haircut to Pee Wee Herman on his Twitter feed. So,
oh, fun.
So that gives you kind of an idea of what this guy's about, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty cool moment. I mean, it's one of those where it's like, you know, you don't get to see those kind of hat tip moments. It's a little corny, sure, but who cares? You know, it's baseball. Baseball's always been a little bit corny.
Yeah.
No matter what the tough guys tell you, there's, you know, something about baseball that's a little different than other sports. So it was cool to see him experience that, and just to see the rest of the team, like Ned Yost, when they went to pull him, you know, they gave him one batter in the sixth inning. He got Victor Martinez out, and Ned Yost was out there for a while, just talking to him, just telling him about the outing, and like pounding him on the chest and smiling at him. And it was just really kind of cool to see, hey, this kid came up and he dealt. And that,
yep,
that doesn't happen that often for the Royals. So, It was really cool to see it. So I was kind of glad to watch. I was expecting him to get shelled in the first inning, frankly, and figured, because that's how it always goes with Royals rookies like that. And it kept me around. So it's pretty,
there you go.
Pretty fun.
I think the most positive thing that we can say from it is the Royals finally did to somebody else what always happens to the Royals, which is some random injury happens, some random pitcher gets called up to start with some weird name that nobody's ever heard of, not some heralded prospect, and just completely shuts down the other team. That happens to Royals every damn time that situation right. occurs. So pretty awesome that the Royals finally get to be the ones that happen to the other team, you know, even though you know they ended up losing the game. But you know, Skoglund did his part. So that's pretty cool. And I think on that bit of positive news, I think we'll leave you with this week's show. Hopefully, all of you this past Memorial Day weekend, hopefully you guys went out to the Memorial Day bash at Kelly's. Always a good time. I might have gone had I not been in a different state. But hopefully it was a good time had by all, as I'm sure it was. Be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's, and of course BP Kansas City, for all the content. Mike, have there been any good? Again, I've been out of the loop, so I haven't really been able to see what any good articles that have gone up recently.
Yeah, Clint's had some stuff about some draft prospects, and he's been kind of doing about one of those every week or so. About guys who might fall to the Royals at 14 in the draft, which is coming up pretty soon, just a couple weeks.
Yep.
And Craig Brown had something today, which was basically an inning-by-inning recounting of Eric Skoglund's big league debut, which is kind of interesting to take another look back, specifically focusing on the pitches. So that's something Craig always likes to do is – kind of break things down like that. So that's another thing that that folks should check out while they are at BP Kansas City.
Absolutely. So be sure to visit BP Kansas City and then visit them at Kelly's. Be sure to tell them the Kansas City Baseball Vault sent you. We will be back next week. You know what? Let's keep it running. Maybe the Royals will be 7 games under .500 again next week. You know, we can make this a theme throughout the season. That would be, what would that, can they even, is it even possible to finish 7 games? You'd have to be 77 and 84, 85. So you
that would be
couldn't
eight.
Be.
You'd have to have a rain out.
Yeah, you couldn't be 7 games under .500 to end the season. No. So
there's just gonna have to be 6 or 8. Pick a side.
Six
Royals.
Or eight. Yep. Or maybe Miguel Almonte never gets to make that fated start. Did they do doubleheader the next day? Didn't they?
They're gonna have to stop through New York on an off day.
Yeah. Okay. Because there was it.
It was
Minnesota.
Last game
they had
series.
The doubleheader.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
That's one of those.
So
I think they won.
All right.
They
well,
lost one? I don't remember. Yes, that was only
yes,
2 weeks ago or so.
Right.
So I don't. Shows what I know.
Shows what you know. Some Royals fan you are. Podcaster.
Right. I know. Bandwagon.
Bandwagon.
Speaking of which, nobody's complaining about Royals voting in the All-Star game this year for some reason.
Yeah. Weird how that.
Go
works.
Figure. The team's not good and people aren't voting for them. Shocker.
Crazy.
Darn hackers.
So, yep. Darn hackers. We'll see. I'm sure the Royals will have at least one representative. We know that.
Right.
Probably be Sal Perez.
It'll probably be Sal Perez, yes.
For the rest of eternity. Anyway, we'll leave you with that this evening. Again, be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's, BP Kansas City. Thank you all so much for listening. We couldn't do this without you. We love you all so much. We will be back next week. Be sure to tune in. Until next time, thank you for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Well, PCL's top offense, but you're real aggressive with them. What were you trying to do?
Honestly, I was just trying to stick to the plan that we've always had, which is be aggressive, stay down zone, and you know, let them make some contact. you know, we did that, and, you know, me and Gally always have a great plan going into it, and, you know, he called a great game.
I mean, 70 strike, I think he had 76 strikes on 100 and some pitches. I mean, I know you've struggled a little bit. He said you were trying to work with your slider a little bit more.
Yeah, we did that and executed pretty well with it tonight. You know, we saved it a little bit towards the end of the game, and that, I think that helped get me through that fifth, sixth, seventh inning, and, yeah, definitely helped in that seventh. It got two strikeouts on it, and, yeah, I think that's definitely helped me these past two starts.
As far as motivation goes, you see a lot of guys coming up and going down. How does that affect your game day to day?
But like you say, I take it day by day. You know, I'm just trying to get better every day, and so is everyone else. And you know, that's the way we all take it. We're young, we're hungry, and you know, we want to make it to the big leagues. That's our ultimate goal. And you know, I think we all do a good job taking it day by day.
Okay, and then what? For guys who don't know, what's kind of the pitch mix that you're trying to use every day? I mean, game to game, what's kind of your go-to pitch and out-pitch and all that?
You know, honestly, it just depends on the day. You know, everyone's different, and, you know, you'll have your off-speed pitches working some day. You'll have your two-seam working one day, and, you know, you try not to think too much about it. It's baseball, and, you know, guys are going to get themselves out. So as long as you pound the zone, you stay ahead, and you work down, everything's going to, you know, it's going to be in your favor. So as long as you do those three things, and, you know, the strikeouts and the ground balls and, you know, the zeros are going to be put up on the scoreboard. So I think that's the way you got to look at it.
You talk about pitching down in the zone, and obviously that's what you're taught, and that's what most guys are taught at a young age. But we're seeing kind of a difference in baseball as far as elevation, and elevating the ball and trying to get it up in the zone is actually more effective for limiting home runs and long balls. Have you guys talked about that stuff at all?
Oh, yeah. I think I started working on that about a year and a half ago. And, you know, I've always been taught down, 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 you know, throw the ball down. And yeah, it was an adjustment, but, you know, once you start getting some outs with it and some swing and misses, you build your confidence, and then it's kind of, you know, second nature at that point. So yeah, that's definitely huge pitches, fastball up. You know, it changes eye levels, and then you can kind of work with whatever's working that day for the next pitch. And yeah, it's kind of a setup pitch, and it's a great pitch. A lot of guys swing over it, so it's awesome.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.